The following is a rebroadcast of Studio Tulsa. This program first aired last year.
Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. In journalist and author Sarah Smarsh's first book, the National Book Award finalist Heartland, the daughter of multi-generational Kansas farmers, told the stories of the women who raised her. These were generations of teen mothers, grandmothers raising kids, and women who worked incredibly hard but could never get ahead. In her new book, originally published as a four-part series for a Roots Music Journal, Smarsh writes about a woman, now a pop icon, who's written songs about women like the women in Smarsh's family, and many other American families as well. She Come By It Natural, Dolly Parton and the Women Who Lived Her Songs, talks of Parton's influence on feminism, although she claims no connection, and a deeper connection with the women who have listened to her music over the decades. Smarsh writes that country music is a language among women, and the songs Parton sings speaks to the work, men, hard times, and survival that are at the heart of many of their lives. Parton left poverty, entered and conquered a male-dominated world, and today is an icon in all sorts of communities across all areas of gender, class, and culture. And Sarah Smarsh is my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Sarah Smarsh, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Your previous book, Heartland, detailed the hardworking and hard luck women in your life that raised you and put their values and your values into place. And it's interesting, that book came, you wrote them pretty much simultaneously with She Come By It Natural, which were a series of articles, which you've now converted into a book around the same time, about Dolly Parton and how she sort of is an image of those hardworking, hard luck women and would write about it so many times in her music. What made you decide to write about her?
Well, you're right that those two projects were simultaneous, and I sure didn't intend for that to be the case. I'm a journalist first by trade, and so, you know, prior to my being an author, and still it's the case that I'm always just kind of hustling stories, and that's how I pay the bills. I find, a magazine or a publication that's kind of in the groove of what I do and pitch an idea to them. Well, there's a great country music magazine called No Depression that I've followed for a long time, and they have this fellowship out for a writer to really dive deep into some kind of intersection between country or roots, Americana music, and broader culture and society. And that prospect excited me as someone who grew up on country music and who rarely saw it treated with the sort of dignity or respect I felt that it deserved as an art form. And I had been thinking a lot about Dolly Parton that year because she had a new album out and was touring for the first time in a long time. This was 2016, so it was amid a very contentious political climate. And then here came Dolly Parton as this universally beloved, unifying figure. And I was noticing that kind of in the zeitgeist. So I applied for this fellowship, got the gig, and then it was like, oh, shoot, now I've got to write that too on top of the book that I'm on deadline for. And I thought, you know, maybe like a few hundred people were going to read this stuff that I wrote about Dolly. And that would have been fine. Sometimes things are like a labor of love. But happily now it's ended up in book form in another election year.
She Come By It Natural is a series of articles, actually, you wrote about Dolly Parton over the course of a year, looking at various aspects of her life. What was it you wanted to investigate about Dolly Parton? Because she is a person who has been interviewed countless times, but never really in a deep, meaningful way. Even in the deep, meaningful interviews, celebrity interviews you'll see from her, it's still all very superficial. And I think you wanted to get at the heart of what she's about.
I did want to get at the heart of what she's about because I feel like what she's about is so essential to this moment in America and our unfolding, the kind of drama all around us and the crises everywhere you turn, whether that's in a political or social or economic or racial sense. And what Dolly Parton is about, in a word, I would argue is grace. So what I mean by that is, she has become a sort of larger-than-life iconic figure, almost a caricature of this, you know, image of a woman with big curves and big hair and lots of makeup and sequins on her clothes. And, you know, she's kind of an emblem of a certain brand of kind of, you know, what other classes of Americans might deem trashy or low rent. And yet, simultaneously, the paradox of her is that her her spirit and her message and her songwriting and her creative genius and her business acumen and her incredibly generous philanthropy all amount to what, by all accounts, is the most genuine, real person and classiest woman, you know, in show business and popular culture. So the reason that I think that's worth considering right now is that she embodies a kind of, I don't know, we might say real Christianity, in that she just exudes love and non-judgment. And that is something that I find sorely lacking in our public leaders and other members of popular culture.
Well, it goes to the population at large. I think everybody on every side of the political spectrum and how we, no matter how you view life, we're all pretty judgmental at this particular point. One of the things you write about at the very beginning of the book is you sort of compare those women that you write about in Heartland and the early Dolly, too. The woman that basically said, I'm going to dress like the woman in Sevier County, Tennessee, that everybody looked down as trashy. I'm going to get out of this town the day after high school graduation. I'm not going to let a man walk all over me. And those themes are writ large within Dolly Parton's life.
Yes, and you mentioned this at the top of our conversation as well, that there's a sort of, you know, the reason that I personally might be well-equipped, or the person that's hopefully somewhat up to the task of the book I intended to write, is that I was raised by Dolly Parton, in a sense. And I don't just mean her records. I mean her, if we think of her as a kind of avatar for millions of, you know, women who go unseen every day but are just incredibly strong, powerful, take no crap, self-sustaining, independent women of a class that is not typically heard in national discourse, let alone seen. Those are the women who raised me. And I, you know, now that I have had a very different life than they have, for instance, I was the first person from my family to go to college by, you know, with a lot of my family members, the first actually to even finish high school. Mm. And so stepping into worlds that they never entered, which has been, you know, a privilege, but also a challenge in some ways, revealed to me the extent to which there are, you know, there is this kind of feminist movement with a capital F that I'm part of and that I'm proud to be part of, but that I think often leaves out of the discussion women who are more like, they're kind of like embodying the tenets of that philosophy in their day-to-day life. But it's not articulated, it's not even self-conscious, it's certainly not academic, it has nothing to do with feminist theory. It's just organic unto themselves and their own indomitable spirits, which you have to have in a hard luck place. You have to believe that you're equal to men to survive. And that's what Dolly Parton had in spades. And as you said, she very boldly in the 1960s, when a woman was supposed to be chasing a wedding ring, left Sevier County, Tennessee, by herself, and declared that she was going to become a star, and folks laughed at her, but who's laughing now?
That's right. You know, I was really struck as I was reading this and reading the beginning where you talked about your Grandma Betty, which you wrote about extensively in Heartland. Grandma Betty didn't have the success, but she had that hard work ethic that Dolly Parton has portrayed all through her life. And, you know, it doesn't matter if it's music, it's film, it's the theme parks, it's everything she has done. I mean, she's always worked very hard. And I think there's a little throwaway line in the book where they're on a Christmas film in the middle of July, and she's wearing white cashmere on a hot day. Everybody's complaining, says, why don't you complain? She says, hey, I've made money, I'm working hard, and I'm doing great. I've gotten rich, and I don't have a reason to complain about anything.
Yes. Yes, that I believe that memory was recounted by Shirley MacLaine. Maybe that was on the set of Steel Magnolias.
Yeah,
that's she embodies that kind of hardworking ethos of the working class of all different stripes, and she seems to have, like you said, never that's still at her core, and you can see by how prolific she is and how she remains so in the culture today. And you mentioned that some of her early work is really what might resonate the most with the kind of attributes that we're discussing right now. You know, some of your listeners might, depending on their age, know her more for, I don't know, in the last couple of decades, her persona has become, she's sort of like a fairy godmother, and there's this kind of like, she appeared on like the, I don't even know what the Miley Cyrus's show on the Disney Network was, Hannah Montana.
Yeah.
She was a guest star on that show sometimes. So for listeners of a certain age, they might not exactly know what we're talking about, but if you go back to her early work, and this is starting, you know, in the 60s and 70s, really concurrent with the women's movement, speaking of feminism, while she wasn't part of that in an overt political way, she was absolutely writing music that was radical for its time. She was saying things like, just because I'm a woman, you know, doesn't mean that it's any worse if I have, you know, sexual trysts than you as a man. She was saying, she was telling the stories of women who had gotten pregnant and didn't have access to reproductive health care or contraception, and the guy had run off, and now they're in a bind as a poor young female in a rural place who's pregnant. I mean, some of these songs radio wouldn't play actually at that time. And a lot of them are very haunting, dark Appalachian melodies, along with those stories that she wrote. And that edge is definitely still in her work. But that's the Dolly Parton music that I grew up on. And it's why I understood so deeply that she saw something about, you mentioned my grandma Betty, who raised me. They were born just a few months apart, actually. Even though Dolly Parton, in a sense, kind of escaped those, you know, unfortunate experiences of a certain class, my grandmother didn't escape them, and Dolly Parton, I understood, was a woman who was telling their stories like very few people cared to do.
That's right. I think when you hear that music of that time, you're taken by the voice, but you really have to listen to the lyrics to understand the dark story she's often telling in those years. That album I think you're referring to is The Fairest One of All, which you write about in the book. You know, she looks like she's wearing all white. You know, it has this, it exudes an image of one thing, but when you hear the songs are completely different. I think the song you're referring mm-hmm. to is Down from Dover.
Yeah, Down from Dover is, I hesitate to say, you could almost listen to it as a horror story. It's quite, it involves tragedy, it involves abandonment, and some, you know, kind of horrific images involving a woman longing for this guy to return, as he claimed that he would, and he doesn't. And then, spoiler alert, the baby itself also meets a terrible fate that sort of parallels the sorrow that she's feeling as a mother. And then she actually has a few songs that are kind of follow that same sort of storyline. One of them is called The Bridge. That one's even darker, and it actually involves suicide. So, she is this sort of like bubbly, sparkly persona, but there are a lot of layers underneath that surface for sure.
Why don't we hear a little bit of Down from Dover? This is from Dolly Parton. My guest today is Sarah Smarsh, journalist and New York Times bestselling author of Heartland. Her new book is about Dolly Parton. It's a series of essays she's converted into a book titled She Come By It Natural, Dolly Parton and the Woman Who Lived Her Songs. And she's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Here's music by Dolly Parton.
I know this dress I'm wearing doesn't hide the secret I have tried concealing. When he left, he promised me that he'd be back by the time it was revealing. The sun behind a cloud just cast a crawling shadow o'er the fields of clover. And time is running out for me, I wish that he would hurry down from Dover. He's been gone so long, when he left the snow was deep up on the ground. And I have seen a spring and summer pass, and now the leaves are turning brown. At any time, a tiny face will show itself, 'cause waiting's almost over. But I won't if he doesn't hurry down from Billy.
That's music by Dolly Parton, who is the subject of the latest book of journalist and author Sarah Smarsh, my guest today, as her new book is titled She Come By It Natural. Sarah, one of the things the first part of the book talks about is here is a woman who's writing about the working women's fight, but she's doing it in a way that at a time when feminism is coming into the public consciousness, but she's purposely avoiding any sort of labeling as feminist. At the time, she's writing very feminist lyrics and feminist songs.
Yes, and this is really the crux of what I hope to convey in this writing, which is that you can, I believe, be a feminist and exude feminism and live its tenets without self-identifying as a feminist with, you know, that specific term. Now, the reason that I think it's important for us to consider this is, you know, I was talking earlier about how I kind of straddle a class line of sorts in terms of where I come from, which is a poor, small family wheat farm in Kansas, and what I do today as a professional journalist. And that gives me a particular lens on the way that class often kind of carves a line through the American experience. And in the case of feminism, which is a movement that's very important to me as a progressive woman, while I identify with that term, I don't feel any sense of self-satisfaction about it. And what I mean by that is I understand that my relationship to the term has everything to do with the fact that I went to college. I've been part of a class and a group that defines feminism in a certain way. Now, where I come from, if when I was just like, you know, a teenager waiting tables on a two-lane highway in small-town rural Kansas, the messages that I was receiving about feminism, even as I was a very independent young female that absolutely, you know, kind of embodied feminism in a lot of ways, I myself was a little bit averse to that term. And the reason is there are political factions who have very adeptly weaponized that word. Now, this goes back to, like, we could dial the clock back a century to the suffrage movement, and there's, like, political cartoons portraying suffragettes as these sort of hag-like, mean, man-hating creatures, and there are parallels to that during the women's movement in the 70s, and then again in the kind of neoconservative movement of the 90s when I was an adolescent. And those messages have been quite successful in some places. So there are women who, of course, they believe that men and women are equal and should be treated thusly, but they don't like that term, and that has to do with politics, not with, like, experiential, lived understanding an embodiment of an idea. And Dolly Parton has always stayed off politics. I have some theories as to why that might be, and I think it probably has something to do with feeling a little bit like, you know, a fish out of water in the world of political discourse that tends to favor a certain type of formal academic language. But just as important as that aspect of social progress is people living it on the ground. And as I try to get across in the book, you know, if I had to choose between, if you've got a woman who's like wearing the term feminist on her shirt, but yet she's not walking the walk of you know, and making decisions that are good for her gender and for herself. And then you've got somebody like Dolly Parton who, like, couldn't be more feminist if you just look at how she's conducted her life, and yet she's not wild about the word. I would take option B any day. they're both important, but there's a lot of women who don't get enough credit for their participation in social progress, and it's because of these political fractures.
We're talking about Dolly Parton today with journalist and author Sarah Smarsh. Her new book is titled She Come By It Natural, Dolly Parton and the Women Who Lived Her Songs. And it's written in four sections. The first is embodying the working woman's fight. The second is Dolly Parton masters the art of leaving. In this case, it's the story of her leaving Porter Wagoner, which helped bring her to stardom. I mean, she became a star because of her talent, her incredible voice, and her incredible songwriting skill. But Porter Wagoner was the platform that raised her to stardom. And he was a very, well, I think in Dolly's own word, he was a chauvinist pig. Nurtured her, but he wanted to keep her forever. And she had bigger plans in her life. And this is really an interesting part of the book because, you know, in those days in country music, it was always about written from a man's perspective about how my wife left me, or, I'm alone, or, you know, it was always written from that perspective. Dolly was writing from the perspective, here's why I'm leaving. And that was probably a very unpopular perspective in Nashville in those days, as far as for songwriting.
No doubt. Yes. And, you know, when she was brought on to the Porter Wagoner Show in the 60s, the idea was, as you alluded to, that she would be sort of like the girl singer, the pretty girl next to him, kind of a gender sidekick, and often with a kind of implied romantic undertone as they sang duets and so on. And as you say, she was such an incredible artist in her own right that she soon, her star kind of eclipsed the hosts, much to his chagrin, because he was kind of a big ego. But as far as the songs that she, you know, the irony of what she was writing about at that moment is they were these songs that were like declarations of, the woman side of the story. And I'm sure that, you know, drove Porter Wagoner nuts to some extent, and yet it was a source of consternation because he made money when her star rose. So and people were responding to her music, which was very transgressive for the time. So one song that comes to mind, she and Porter may well have co-written this, I don't know, but there's this amazing duet they sang on their show called "She and the Car and the Mobile Home Are Gone." and in this song, it kind of flips the, as you say, the kind of trope of country music, in that it's not like, oh, you know, this horrible woman left me and I'm miserable. It's sort of like this cheeky, funny, you know, you hear the woman's side of why she's leaving, and they're engaged in this banter, and it creates a sort of sympathetic figure in the woman, and you understand that the reason that she took off with the mobile home is that he was a terrible partner. So these were very bold ideas at that time, and to be sung at the heart of, you know, the patriarchal culture that was Nashville was, it must have been quite harrowing for a young woman who was just barely out of the holler in East Tennessee. But wow, she pulled it off with aplomb.
My wife and I were happy with our trailer, but she didn't dig my running around all night.
He just laughed and took it kind of light.
Well, I should have paid attention to her warning when she told me she'd leave if I didn't change. 'Cause when I come home about sun up this morning, well, I detected something mighty strange. Her in the car and the mobile home is gone, boy.
I was taking off while you was carrying on.
Things are really shocked. I came home to an empty lot.
'Cause me in the car and the mobile home was gone.
Yes, her.
That's Porter Wagoner with Dolly Parton singing "She and the Car and the Mobile Home Are Gone." And of course, eventually, Dolly Parton would leave Porter Wagoner.
For sure. And, you know, when she got to Nashville, there were so few women who were headlining in their own right. You know, Patsy Cline, of course, comes to mind. She was a few years before Parton. And
Loretta Lynn and Tammy Wynette. That's about it.
Yeah, the list is very short. And Patsy Cline, quite famously, in kind of music history, was just totally screwed by the record labels in that, you know, she made them very rich and she basically made a pittance for her own skills. And, you know, but to her, it was like, well, take the deal because this is a man's world. And my last job was slitting chickens' throats in Virginia in a meat processing plant. But Dolly, you know, she had the, I don't know if it was the vision or the presumption that she deserved more than she was being offered. And while she did stay actually 2 years beyond her contract with Porter Wagoner, and that probably was two years when she was working out the difference between society's expectations that she'd listen to a man and defer to him and be grateful that he let her into the workforce, quote unquote. And then this part of her that wanted to break free and do her own thing. And of course the latter part won out. And as you say, she writes this song, the brilliance of the kind of chess move is that in doing so, you know, she made this generous gesture of claiming that she wrote "I Will Always Love You" for Porter Wagner. I'm dubious as to the whether that's actually true or not. But it appeased his ego, as she knew that it would. And then what I love is that that song has made her richer than any of her other songs that she's written, in large part because of the blockbuster recording of it by Whitney Houston in 1992 for the Bodyguard soundtrack. And so, like, her sort of, like, bittersweet kiss off to Porter Wagner, who has lorded over her and made her life miserable, is like every time that song plays, money drops into her bank account. she's a little bit of a genius, I think.
So you wrote these essays about 2016 and early 2017. And as we're approaching the end of 2020, what do we need to know about Dolly Parton?
I think that the most important takeaway from kind of meditating on her life and her persona is her authenticity. And to go back to my, you know, a point that I made earlier, wrapped up in that authenticity is an authentic grace. So why that is relevant to this moment, I think there is, you know, we're in an incredibly difficult moment full of controversies and strained communications and fast judgments, and also I would say a lot of kind of hollow virtue signaling in various ways about, you know, well, I'm on the right side of history and you know that because I'm tweeting this. Well, Dolly Parton doesn't necessarily tweet her virtue, but if you look at the decisions that she's made over the course of her life and the people she has chosen to lift up and what she has done with her fame and fortune, leveraging it for vulnerable peoples, and the way that she's extended her love and non-judgment to all sorts of fans, and she has an immense LGBTQ following. And if you go to one of her shows in these big arenas, you look around and it is every kind of person. It's a dude with muddy work boots wearing a t-shirt that says "Proud Redneck." It's a group of drag queens, it's old women, it's teenage goth girls, it's all races. It is, all these elements are supposed to hate each other. They're all at the Dolly concert together and in harmony, swaying together. And so there is something, I believe, to learn from the way that she showed. You know, as a writer, there is this kind of cliche writing edict that goes, show, don't tell. Well, sometimes telling is important, and I understand that making an overt political statement is part of this moment, and I do it myself sometimes. But if you're just doing that without, if you're just talking the talk without walking the walk, it would be good to examine the way that Dolly Parton has conducted her life and career. All you need to know, you will find at her show when you look out at that diverse audience, that she is the real deal as far as what we might aspire to for a democratic country.
Journalist and author Sarah Smarsh speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Her latest book is titled She Come By It Natural, Dolly Parton and the Women Who Lived Her Songs. It's published by Scribner's. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.